Eat Drink Indie Radio is powered by eatdrinkindie.com. Eat local, drink local, eat drink indie. Welcome to Eat Drink Indie Radio on WFYI HD2 The Point. I'm your host, Jolene Ketzenberger. This week on Eat Drink Indie Radio, we're looking back and forward at the local food scene as we talk with industry veterans as well as a young chef. First, we'll talk with entrepreneurs Kathleen Tracy and Peter Courtney, who opened Movable Feast 20 years ago in Indianapolis. We'll hear what the food scene was like 20 years ago, what customers would and wouldn't try, how far we've come since then, Movable Feast's new and much larger location, and where the business is headed. Then we'll check in with Chef Jeremiah Clark of Cobblestone in Zionsville, who tells us about his career so far, how he got started, how Thomas Keller and the French Laundry played a part, and why he's happy to be back in Zionsville. We have got some great info and insight into where Indy's food scene has been and where it's going, so stay with us for more here on Eat Drink Indy Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. We all seem a little bit fascinated by the food world these days. We watch chefs on TV, follow along as restaurants try to make a go of it, and root for entrepreneurs to get funding for a food biz. But it's especially great when you can watch businesses succeed locally. And that's what Movable Feast has done over the past 20 years. Owners Kathleen Tracy and Peter Courtney launched a catering business in Indianapolis in a tiny 800-square-foot building on 71st Street near Binford Boulevard back in 1997. That quickly evolved into a lunch spot, and they spent 17 years in that space, encouraging customers to try new things and expanding their menu as their customers' tastes changed. Kathleen tells us what she was doing 20 years ago, what Movable Feast was like in the beginning, and how it evolved along the way.
Before Movable Feast, I was working for a local food service business, and I was doing menu planning for them and managing. And we came back from our vacation and I quit my job.
Just like that?
Just like that. It wasn't planned. It just happened. And didn't know what I was going to do. And I'm a graphic designer. And so I was thinking about doing that. And I was like, I really love being in the food industry. And we decided to open up a catering business. And so...
So that's what was going on 20 years ago for you.
Yeah, 20 years ago. So that's what was going on. It was crazy. So we took all the money that we'd saved for buying a house and went around to auctions and bought a bunch of equipment.
Now, tell me how the original location came about, because that was such a tiny, tiny little spot.
It was a tiny, tiny spot. It was 800 square feet. And what happened was a friend of ours was in a serious automobile accident. And we were spending a lot of time at the hospital with her. She had a brain stem cell injury. And her parents had a building that they had built, which is a drive-through pharmacy. And they were looking for someone to lease it out. And we were told it was a fully commercial kitchen, and we were young and naive, and we believed them, and we went in and were in there and had signed the lease and got it to it, and it wasn't commercial grade. But
oh my goodness! So you had planned to just go right in there and start the business, but it wasn't up to code.
It was not. So like the electrical wasn't for commercial grade, and it was a challenge. But we got through it, and we were there for 17 years.
So what was it like 20 years ago in the food world? I was trying to remember back, when Food Network started, in the mid-90s. But what was it like in the food world then? Can you look back?
Oh, yeah. It was absolutely... it was an educational process for us and for our customers, because I had ideas of things like we had like a black bean calico salad on our menu, and I had a raw veggie salad, and we had lots of like grilled chicken focaccia. Then people didn't know what stuff was, and they weren't afraid. They were just not educated about it. It wasn't like it is now, where people are so willing to try anything at all.
Right, and they know the ingredients and where they come from and that sort of in the dishes and that sort of thing. So everybody's a kind of a foodie now.
Right. People didn't know what basil was. People didn't know what pesto or balsamic vinegar, and now those are just everywhere. And it was nuts because I grew up in a family where we had ossobuco and caponata, and those were staples in our diets. And so it was just, you don't want to be a food snob and make fun of your customers. So you're just trying to. They wanted fountain drinks and fried food and pictures of the food,
and that just wasn't what you were about, right?
No, it wasn't. As a matter of fact, when we first opened up, we had packaged dinners, which were. Everybody's doing now.
So like grab-and-go things.
Right, we had a whole big grab-and-go section. We had a big cooler with it filled with stuff, chicken gorgonzola and all kinds of things that people just... And it didn't work out. And so I was like, okay, we'll try something else. But where it didn't work out for us, it also didn't work out for Meijer, had the same thing going on when they opened up on 96th Street. They had a whole entire wall because they were doing that in other cities, and it was took on. And Indiana was just a little slower to come around, but they're here now, and...
So you kind of had to bring your customers along, right? So what were some of the early things that did sell on the original menu?
We have a lot of things that are still on our menu, like the turkey pesto provolone. What else is still on there? The turkey Reuben, that's still on there. One of the things that we did not have that we sell the most of is soup. I make so much soup. It's crazy. We did not have that on the menu at all. And so we just kind of went along. Well, we were going to be doing just like catering, and then we kind of became a lunch business, and so things just kind of evolved.
So what was the original plan 20 years ago, launching a food business?
It was going to be catering and like grab and go. And then when we got in our facility and we were there working and doing stuff, we were like, where are these people eating for lunch? And it was just all fast food around us.
And that was at 71st and Binford, right? Tiny little building.
Right, tiny little building. There was a Taco Bell. There was a Dairy Queen. There was a Rally's. There was a Burger King or Burger, I don't know, Steak and Shake. All of the fast food, they were all there. And then there was us with no fountain drinks and no fried food.
Now, you didn't have a fryer, right? You weren't making French fries or anything?
No French fries or anything. And here we are trying to get people to eat, like, raw veggie salad with a balsamic vinaigrette. And so.
Well, now, they must have been interested enough to keep coming back.
They were interested enough to keep coming back. And we had a solid following of people who traveled a lot. And that's who we're catering to, is mostly people who ate out a lot in business in different cities. And they were like, thank God you're here, thank God you're here. So it was fun.
So how did that grow? You know, how did you bring people along and, so that focaccia becomes an everyday thing?
Well, it's interesting. We had actually had a fax list, and we would fax out the menu every day. And all
oh, my gosh,
specials.
A fax, F-A-X,
That's
fax,
right.
Oh, gosh.
Fax, F-A-X, every day to the businesses, and we would ask them to put it up in the break rooms. And so they would put it up in the break rooms, and some of the people would come over and be adventurous, and, a lot of the people thought, oh, my God, you're so expensive. And I was just like, it's really inexpensive. So that was part of the way. It was just word of mouth, basically. Word of mouth. We didn't do any advertising. We still don't.
Well, that's such a... In a business with such very slim margins, there really isn't a lot of room for that often,
There isn't. You're absolutely right. You're right.
So you do have to rely on your customers. So did you start to notice a change in them, or did you start to notice them becoming more adventuresome along the way somewhere?
A little of both. What was really interesting is watching our customers bring their kids in, and then we would do the graduation parties for the kids, and then the college graduation, and then the kids are getting married, and now they're bringing their kids in, and you're just like, holy wow.
Well, when you've been around for 20 years, I guess that happens.
That's right. It absolutely happens. But it's been fun to watch everybody's palate kind of change in advance, and people are so much more willing to try things. And now I'm constantly asking people here, taste this, taste this, taste this. And they will, without a question, they'll just put something in their mouth and tell me if they like it or not, which is awesome.
Now, that must be really kind of a change from 20 years ago when people were way more hesitant.
Oh, absolutely. Like I said, they wanted a picture of something, and they wanted to know exactly what was in it. And plus, we were in a location. We had a lot of blue-collar people working back in the industrial parks. Mm-hmm. And so you're not getting people that have a little more sophisticated palate. And I get it, you know. We had one kid who would come in, and he would always get a bagel sandwich, because we had a Black Forest bagel sandwich. He'd get a bagel sandwich with ketchup and ham on it, and that was it. And he graduated from Park Tudor, and then he lived in Switzerland for a long time, and now he has the most adventuresome palate, and but that's what he liked, and I would make it for him every time, and we loved their family, but that's what he wanted.
Well, I guess it's probably fun to see that progression over the years. What sort of things do people want now? Have their tastes changed?
I believe so. People want fresh, and they want local stuff, and they want to know who's making their stuff. And that's what we always let people know. We make everything here, and so we can tell you exactly what's in everything. And that's one of the reasons why we came up with all these kits, is because I've got some serious food allergies, and so we're getting stuff from the supermarket, and I was having bad allergic reaction to it. Started reading through all the ingredients, and it's like, I don't want to be eating all that stuff, and I don't want my people to be eating all that stuff. And so we try to make everything that's kind of clean and fresh.
We've been talking with Kathleen Tracy of Movable Feast in Indianapolis. We'll be right back with more from Kathleen here on Eat, Drink, Indie Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. How do you develop and grow a food business? For Kathleen Tracy and Peter Courtney of Movable Feast, that means constant change, being flexible, and not being afraid to fail. Kathleen says she's constantly coming up with new ideas, filling notebooks with possibilities, and then filling shelves in the shop with sauces, meal kits, grab-and-go items, and more. And Movable Feast will launch dinner hours this fall. Kathleen talks about cooking, dinner parties, classes, the new larger location, and more. Tell me how the business has grown from probably primarily lunch and catering to a lot of the grab and go, and now you have your own line of products.
Well, it came from sitting on the couch and having a glass of wine. And I've got stacks and stacks of notebooks. I want to start doing cooking classes soon. So that's another thing that we're going to go into. And we're going to be open for dinner. It's always changing. And I think as a small business, you have to be really flexible and don't be afraid to fail. I've tried a lot of things that haven't worked out, and I'm going to get back up and I'm going to try something else. And if it doesn't work out, that's okay. That's how you learn.
Well, now, things must have worked out pretty well because, like I said, you have a large line of prepared foods, too. Tell me a little bit about the product line.
Well, we have 6 different kits that you start in your crock pot, or you can use them in an Instapot, and it's like, I call it a favor to your future self, because you start it in the morning and you come home and your dinner's all ready and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm so smart and wonderful and I've fed my whole family and I have leftovers and it's healthy. So we have those. We also have a jerk sauce, a lemon sauce, Asian invasion. We've got all different kinds of sauces, marinades, dressings. I have a fresh basil dressing. And then we have different kinds of rubs that you can put on your meats and you can make dips and stuff with. I don't know. I have so many ideas. I want to make everything into the retail line because I want to help people cook, because I think it's a big challenge. This is how it happened. I started asking people, what are you making when you go home for dinner? And people would say lunch meat, or they would say cereal. And I thought, that's the saddest thing ever. I'm going to help you. And this is, and they're $8, and it feeds your whole family for $8. I mean,
so these are the meal kits, right? That you can just throw them together.
You just throw them in the crock pot, and you can add extra vegetables if you want, or you don't have to add anything, and they're still good. And so, yeah, because I was like, that's lunch meat and cereal for dinner is sad. Do you make dinner, right?
Right. You know, I cook all the time, but I think sometimes people are intimidated about cooking, and maybe that might be because, I mean, we see so much of it today, you know, and all the chefy shows on TV, and You know, I try to encourage people to just cook.
Well,
you know?
And it's okay to fail. If you screw it up, it's okay. So what has happened? You know, you messed up. I mess up all the time. So I call the crock pot kits the gateway to cooking, too. Because you can, you know, put stuff in there and the base is already set. And then if you want, you can add the frozen chicken or you can add the last 20 minutes, add some quinoa in there, or add whatever you want in your refrigerator and make it your own. It's yours. You do what you want with it.
So it isn't intimidating. It's not scary. It isn't hard, right?
Exactly. And Peter has a good story. He was at the farmer's market one week selling, and this lady came up and she said she came home from work and her six-year-old daughter had made dinner. And she said, oh my gosh, how did you make dinner? And she had gone into the pantry and found one of the kits and followed the instructions and made dinner for the whole family. 6 years old.
Okay, now that is awesome.
Yeah, that's really awesome. And so now she felt like empowered by that. And I think that's great.
Well, you said you have lots of ideas. Where do your ideas take you? You fill notebooks. What's in those notebooks?
Oh, gosh. Everything and anything. It is insane. One of the things I want to do is I want to have a scavenger hunt that takes you through the park and goes to all the different businesses. We started a page called Sector 65, which is all the little local businesses around here that are up and down the 65th Street corridor. I want to do dinner parties down here. I want to do cooking classes down here. We just had a giant party for our 20th anniversary. We had three bands playing outside, and we just set up a big buffet and let everybody take what they want. And we had a bucket and said, pay what you want. You know, it's just kind of a family community thing. So we just, there's so many things I want to do. I couldn't tell. I want to make frilly aprons to sell. Seriously, I do. I have all these patterns cut out, and I have two sewing machines. I just don't have enough time.
Well, it sounds like those notebooks must be getting pretty full.
They are full. They are full. But that's how we started, you know, started doing all of this other stuff, which is cool. So, and since I'm a designer, I'm designing all the labels and packaging. And
well, now that's true. So since you do have a graphics background, how does that fit in? You're designing all of these?
I'm designing everything and all the packaging, and that's a huge thing in itself because you have to be up to code for the Board of Health and through. I just got our building passed through the FDA, so we can cross state lines. And I'm on Amazon now.
Oh my goodness, your products? Really?
Yeah, they are. I had them on there and I pulled them back off, but I'm still on there as a seller. So I was like, I'm going too fast. I need to like reevaluate and figure out exactly what I'm doing with the photography and everything. So it's a lot. But it's fun. It's really fun. And Peter's awesome. He's been every step of the way. He's like, whatever you want to do, I'm your biggest cheerleader. And so I couldn't ask for a better partner.
Now, you guys both must have worked really hard on the new facility, the new location. I mean, for one thing, it's huge.
It is huge. It is huge. You're absolutely right, Jolene. I had to draw up all these plans for the Board of Health, and I had to draw all the electrical plans and the plumbing plans and then give them to somebody and leap of faith. And here's the check, and please make sure it all works. And then the Board of Health came out, and they said, oh, you can't open your ceiling. You have to have a drop ceiling in your kitchen. And we were like, we had gone through the Board of Health several times, and they said, no, it just needs to be bright and cleanable. And so if you notice, it's a different color. And so we had them paint it a different color before we had all the ductwork and the electricals, because all this stuff was put in after it was painted. And so the girl said, you're not going to be able to open. And I just sat there and sobbed. And she said, you're going to have to put a drop ceiling. I said, well, there's no money for a drop ceiling. That's not going to happen. Because I had all this money saved, and I didn't touch our retirement, but we spent everything that we had. So that was scary, but we made it through, and they changed their mind about the drop ceiling.
We've been talking with Kathleen Tracy of Movable Feast in Indianapolis. We'll be right back with more from Peter Courtney as well here on Eat, Drink, and Do Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Be familiar with the name Sector 65 in Indianapolis, but there's a whole string of shops such as Great Fermentations, Beer Brewery, and food businesses like Movable Feast located on 65th Street between Binford Boulevard and Allisonville Road. I stopped in at Movable Feast recently to catch up with owners Kathleen Tracy and Peter Courtney, who are marking 20 years in business this year. Peter tells us what it was like going from their tiny former location to the much more spacious new digs and what it's like at Sector 65. From your perspective, having, you know, done a lot of the work on here, what was it like going from the tiny little space to this very spacious space?
Well, it's been a playground for Kathleen because she got to design it all, but it's amazing how quickly we filled it up. People thought, what are you doing in here? But it's constantly evolving. She's constantly tweaking it. You know, Kathleen dubbed the area Sector 65 down here.
So that was your idea.
Okay. Yeah, so all of it is great, and people thought we were crazy moving down here, but it's by far the best thing we ever did. We have fabulous neighbors. Everyone's very collaborative. We have lots of parties and events down here, and it's just we have beautiful gardens out front where people can come sit on the patio and enjoy it and have a beer from next door when they're open, and it's just we have a great coffee roaster, Lisa's from us, Liz from Limelight Coffee Roasters. It's just there's just an energy down here. Everybody's making things. Everybody's creating things. So
well, now it is an interesting area, but I'm not sure people are aware of it as they might be. You know, I think you know beer brewery, of course, and Great Fermentations,
sure,
and Movable Feast. I mean, you are creating, you know, some critical mass now.
No question about it. So I mean, people get an idea on the northeast side of Indianapolis. It's on 65th between Binford and Allisonville. The small development has done a fabulous job redeveloping the facade, spending millions of dollars, but it's probably like 85 to 100 independent businesses down here. People are probably getting things they never knew, but they're evolving from here. And when we moved down here, we just immediately fell in love with it, just in the people and the commerce is happening, so it's fun.
So what's your take on the changes in the past 20 years? You know, what are some of the changes that you've noticed as well?
We first opened up, we felt bad for the people in the area, like, what are these people eating? Because it was like a murderer's row of fast food. They didn't have a grocery store there. And so Kathleen had all these concepts and everything, and she's awesome in adapting and diversifying things. And so that's how we evolved into being a lunch place, because these poor people, like, what were they eating? But the greatest people's acceptance of, you know, a local place, fresh made food, things that, you know, wasn't dropped, poured out of a bag into a fryer. Seriously, people come in and they say, where are the pictures of food? Maybe she touched upon this. Like, where can I supersize this? We don't have fountain drinks. We don't have a fryer. It's like all fresh food. And
we don't have hamburgers.
Yeah, they're like, they go, what do you mean you don't have hamburgers? I'm like, well, there's Burger King, Wendy's, Dairy Queen, you know, you name it. All of them right there. Like, we're the place that does. So, you know, and you know what, though, Jolene and Kathy and I, from a very early age, a day when we started, we weren't like food snobs to people. We were like, you'd like to educate people. They didn't know what things were. And so Kathleen like took the time to explain to them what things were. Like, let's bring them along. So people in Indianapolis now, I think it's hard to start a business or start a restaurant, what they're facing. It's amazing. It's easier now because people are much more acceptable to things. They want to try things because people are like stubborn, you know, like meat and potatoes sort of thing. So
now that is interesting. You know, the Indianapolis market has changed as well. And so it's a whole different public.
Just because you throw it out there doesn't mean people are going to accept it. People know what it is. And so now people understand what it is. And so now well, I'm not saying it's easier, but it's people are more accepting, people more. It's another generation, isn't it?
Well, I guess it's true. So it has been a generation, 20 years. Oh, my gosh.
It is.
Yeah.
When you have kids who used to come in our place and they would only eat, like, I want just turkey and bread. I don't want to have anything, like, a little different. And now they're, like, eating the most, you know, like, jerk pork sandwiches, things like you.
Well, I'll have the black bean burger.
Yeah.
I'm like, yay.
And now they're bringing their kids in and the babies in. So that's when it hits you. You know what I mean? Like, here is a little kid who started coming to your place who was reluctant. Like, I want to go to McDonald's. And then their mom or dad is dragging our place. And now they're bringing their kids in. It's like really come full circle. That part is really, really cool.
Well, tell me a little bit about some of the other ideas.
Well, the classes are one of the things that we're really excited about, and I think I have like 150 people signed up for it. I know. So I got to get on that. What I want to do is I want people to break up into pairs and cook together. Okay, so it's an experience, and you can bring your own beer and wine in, and we're going to like, we'll have a tapas night. And so we're all going to do appetizers. And so Jolene and I are going to cook, you know, whatever your recipe card says, and we'll break everybody up. And then when we're finished, we'll sit down together and we'll all share a meal and drink our beer and wine. And I have I want to do dog biscuit making classes because
oh,
puppy playground.
That's fun.
Puppy playground. We want to do some heart healthy ones. We want to do some like romantic like couples classes. We want to do team building exercises. We've talked to some people with community hospital to for the instead of going to a Colts game or a Pacer game to have people actually doing hands-on tactical stuff just to get people comfortable in the kitchen because a lot of people just don't feel comfortable with that skill set, and I feel so comfortable. I have been cooking since I was literally like 2 years old. My mom was like, here, if you have hands, you can be scrubbing something or cleaning.
So you've been doing this all along?
Yes, my entire life. My entire life.
So how did you decide to get into food from graphic design?
Well, that's an interesting story. I used to work for myself. I had my own business, and I was doing programs for Clues Hall and the Indianapolis Ballet and stuff like that. And then I was doing some freelance stuff, and I had some clients that owed me a bunch of money, and I needed money, and I had waited tables in college, and so I started working for a local establishment, and they were just pouring stuff out of the freezer, and I was like, you know, my family's got a food and wine background, let's elevate this a little bit. And so we did, and then I went into management with them, and it was fun. And then it just got to be babysitting everybody, and it was not so much fun. And
so that's when you have to go out on your own, right?
That's right. The only thing I missed about that was the benefits and paid vacation.
Well, there's that.
Then there's that, right.
So what other kind of products can we expect to see down the road? Do you have other things that are simmering on the back burner, so to speak?
For the retail line? Well, we have the simple syrups that I'm coming out with, and I have 4 or 5 different ones we're going to be having for cocktails or for teas or ice creams or whatever. That doesn't have to be an alcoholic thing. I'm going to be doing stacked enchiladas, which yes, they're delicious. And they're so much easier than rolled enchiladas if you're an enchilada person. I just got a case of delicious corn tortillas from El Milagro, which is a wonderful tortilla factory. My mom and dad are from Southern California, and I grew up in Cleveland, and we couldn't get tortillas, and so we used to make our own tortillas. Is that okay? Yeah. So there's things like that that are going to be coming out. We're going to be having a beef burgundy with polenta for our dinner menu. We're going to be open until 7 o'clock on Friday and Saturday nights, and we're going to have a happy hour menu in corn with the brewery next door. And so we're going to have like sausages with a beer cheese sauce. We're going to have the beef burgundy with polenta. We're going to have street tacos. So there's a bunch of different things. It's going to be a real limited menu, but it will be pretty diverse.
We've been talking with Peter Courtney and Kathleen Tracy of Movable Feast in Indianapolis. For more information on their restaurant and shop, check out movablefeast.name or look for it on Facebook. Kitzenberger, and we are back here on Eat, Drink, Indie Radio, and today we're talking with Chef Jeremiah Clark, who's now at Cobblestone in Zionsville. I've followed Jeremiah's career since he was a culinary student determined to land an externship at Chef Thomas Keller's French Laundry in California, one of the very best restaurants in the country, and one that has been notoriously difficult to get a hold of. Jeremiah's phone calls and emails went unanswered for months, but as I mentioned, he was determined, and he and his instructors at the Chef's Academy in Indianapolis finally got through, and he got a shot at an internship. Jeremiah tells us how that all happened, how working at the French Laundry and at Thomas Keller's Bouchon helped shape him as a chef, where he's been since then, and how he's come back to Zionsville.
So it goes back to going to the Chef's Academy, and when I started there, I just had a desire to work for the best chefs that I could possibly work for. So I started in America, researched, and you know, the French Laundry had recently had won top restaurant in the world back in 2004, and then was number one in America at the time. And so I...
Now, did you know much about the restaurant or the chef, Thomas Keller? I mean, were you familiar with what was going on out there?
Not prior to culinary school at all. So I did a lot. I did my research and learned more about him, and obviously read the French Laundry cookbook and bought the rest of his cookbooks and started reading all those, and just got kind of infatuated with Thomas Keller and what he was doing and how much he was affecting the culinary world. I also, you know, and so I started sending my resume, sending emails, calling, everything I could do to try and get attention.
Well, now, but it's notorious for not answering phone calls there. You know, it's very hard to get reservations. It's hard to have someone pick up the phone. So you were hoping that would happen for you, right?
Very much so. I was very hope, and I honestly got a lot of somewhat negativity towards it, just opposed to me ever getting there. You know, even Tony Hanslet said to me that, you know, good luck getting there. You're probably not going to get there, especially for an externship. And, you know, executive chefs that have been doing this for years try and go work there, and they can't even get there. So, you know, the thought of you getting there is outrageous.
So you were a culinary student in Indianapolis, you know, from, you know, trying to get to one of the world's best restaurants.
With barely any education or experience. You know, I had only worked for, you know, Taste Cafe for a few months. Anyway, it took us... I started culinary school in July of 2008, and no one answered the phone until March of 2009. So it took many months of, you know, the phone just ringing and ringing and ringing, and, you know, no answers to emails or letters or nothing. So
this was a huge long shot for the
huge.
Just for the idea that you could get a position at the French Laundry.
Huge long shot. I mean, and I also was sending resumes to other restaurants just to hope to work at a three Michelin star restaurant. You know, Danielle and Le Bernardin, Alenia. But I obviously had my heart set on, you know, working for Thomas Keller. And so eventually when they did answer the phone, I was able to set up a 2-day stage that I had to fly out there the next week. And my dad helped me out, and we both went out there together, and he drove me up. And, you know, I worked 40 hours in 2 days.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my God. So you fly out there. So you finally get somebody on the phone. How did you convince them? I mean, you're just some kid in Indiana. How did you convince them to have you come out, even for a stage?
It wasn't... I mean, there was the culinary director of the Chef's Academy was on the phone with me. And so he talked and I talked, and we tried to... You know, it was... We were just really talking to some lady, some receptionist, you know. And she got us in the email to... talked to the morning sous chef and the culinary assistant out there. And so the culinary assistant kind of set up the stage for the next week, and then it, you know, it's really based on your performance in that, you know, 2 days that you're working, if you're gonna be able to get a shot at, you know, an actual 4-week externship. So
what did you do when you got out there? What was that like?
It was inspiring. It was, you know, as soon as we landed, you know, we got our rental car and we drove up there at midnight, because I wanted to obviously, you know, see it and make sure we were going to get there on time and not get lost, because neither of us had ever been to Yountville or Northern California. So, you know, we drove up there super late to find it, you know, and just seeing the sign for the first time was, you know, breathtaking. And, you know, we got out and I took a picture and then we went back to our hotel. You know, I barely slept an hour, just with jitters of going to be able to work there and see it. And
now, how old were you?
I was 19. So, you know, and then I was supposed to be there at 5 in the morning. And so, you know, didn't get really any sleep. We got up, and drove there, started at 5 a.m. And kind of the morning crew typically ends at about 5 or 6 at night. But I wanted to, since I knew I was only going to be there for 2 days, you know, I wanted to push myself and watch service. And so I asked if I could stay for service, and they allowed me to. And so, you know, I didn't leave till 2 a.m, you know, when the shift of parties were over, we're done with making the menu for the next day. And so I stayed around for that. And then of course had to be back at 5 a.m, to start my second day. And so I, again, didn't get any sleep, maybe an hour, and went back the next day. And then, you know, I had a conversation, sat down with the morning sous chef after that second day was over, and we kind of talked about my performance and stuff. And then he agreed to, you know, have me come out in December of 2009 to do a 4-week externship.
That must have just been awesome for you.
Oh, it was a God moment. And you know, I called one of my chefs from the Chef's Academy and told him the news. And I was just so excited and just thrilled to be able to be a part of it. So
you finished that year of school, right? And then you went out there?
Yeah. So I finished up culinary school. My internship, they have like a, you know, an internship in your second to last term at Taste Cafe, and then the externship is your full-time job. So after that, I moved out there and then technically finished school after the externship was over. So and then when I was done at the French Laundry at Bouchon, but went in there, you know, started out as a commis and worked en marge and worked first course. But it was awesome to be a part of that same, you know, same driven and focused and, you know, definitely want to, same quality and standards that the French Laundry has, just as another different, completely different atmosphere and style of cuisine and bistro food. And so.
Well, now tell me about bringing that experience back to Indiana, because you moved back here after that, right?
Yeah, I moved back here. I wanted to be a part of the, you know, Indianapolis food scene and bringing it up to a standard and a quality that they deliver at three Michelin star restaurants in general. And so bringing back that sense of urgency that Thomas Keller has placarded all over his restaurants, and the finesse, and just the, you know, the drive to create a perfect meal. So he, you know, that's what I definitely want to bring back to Indiana and Zionsville in particular, is just the quality and the excellence that you have at Michelin star restaurants.
Do you think you can bring that that drive, that expectation to Indiana?
I think we can definitely do it in baby steps. You know, I don't think we can come in here and rule it with iron fist and say this is the way, you know, or else. Just because I don't think it's going to work here. But I think we can gradually, you know, move towards that and train our staff and our cooks accordingly, and keep them focused on the mission and drive for a perfect meal. You know, doesn't necessarily have to have tablecloths. So
now that is interesting. So talk a little bit about that sort of philosophy of really high level service in a little bit of a more of a laid back atmosphere.
I mean, we definitely want to create a destination and create a value to Zionsville and its guests and team members and local farmers, and we want to create a lasting culinary memory that pairs with the village experience that we have in Zionsville.
Well, now it is a destination. It does have its an identity, an experience. So, you know, how are you going to, are you going to build on that, you know, and set yourself apart? Is it service?
I think it's service. I think it's, obviously, you know, food is definitely a huge aspect of it, but I think service is definitely going to set us apart, because there's just so many, there's so many great restaurants in Indianapolis at this point. And I think it's growing and expanding. And great new restaurants are opening as well, but I think if we can stand out in service, because I think that is something that is somewhat lacking, I think we'll be a step above, and we'll be the I'd love to be the standard that everybody strives to be in service and in food, but I think I think a lot of people understand food now, and they can, you know, they know good food, so, and they expect it. So I think that's going to be our niche is service and, you know, obviously finesse.
We've been talking with Chef Jeremiah Clark of Cobblestone in Zionsville. We'll be right back with more from Jeremiah here on Eat, Drink, Indie Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Indianapolis dining scene continues to grow. So how does a restaurant stand out? For Chef Jeremiah Clark of Cobblestone in Zionsville, service and finesse will be the keys. I sat down with Jeremiah recently in Cobblestone's beautiful courtyard to talk about how the young chef has pulled from his experience at the French Laundry in California and his time with local restaurants to shape how he's approaching his new gig in Zionsville. Now talk a little bit about the history of the Cobblestone Grill. We're sitting on the patio right now. Beautiful space, very much of Zionsville. So it's been around for quite a while.
Yeah, it's been around for 17 years. They've gone through quite a bit different, you know. They've always wanted to be a neighborhood, you know, restaurant where, you know, you can come down and you can have, you know, a great burger, you know, and you can sit at the beautiful bar, sit in the patio, you know, that makes you feel like you're in a different world. Very quaint. But, you know, and I definitely still want to strive to be that and still want to be a restaurant where somebody can come in multiple times a week. We're not striving to be somewhere that's $300 a person, but we still want to provide an experience that you would pay $300 a person for, whether that be a burger or, you know, or foie gras. So we are going to push ourselves to be that.
Now, talk a little bit about your progression. So you had been in Zionsville before at Plum's Upper Room, right? So talk a little bit about your own personal progression in your career, and how it's kind of come full circle back to Zionsville.
So kind of after the French Laundry, after Bouchon, coming back, you know, I was at Taste for a little while, worked with Layden Roberts at Meridian, and then kind of went, you know, did a stand at Eggshell Bistro, and then I came to Zionsville, moved here, and then was the chef at Plum's for a little, just under 2 years. Joined Cunningham Restaurant Group, learned a lot with them, learned how to run a business properly, and so it was a great opportunity with Cunningham Restaurant Group. And then, you know, to come back to Zionsville, I'm super excited to be back in Zionsville. Loved it. You know, I loved when I was at Plum's, and just getting to know the guests and really build that relationship. You know, I'm very much, I like touching tables. You know, I like talking with guests, you know, and about their dining experience, and obviously pushing myself to perfect that. Whether it was, you know, a mistake that we made, you know, I want to come and talk to you about, you know, I apologize, but also talk to you, you know, I want to make this experience better and push ourselves to perfection, but also, you know, learning the guests and becoming somewhat of a friend and a companion, you know, with them.
So it seems like, from my perspective and watching your career over the years, that you're going to become a high-profile chef, that this is kind of the path you're on. So are you okay with that? Are you looking forward to that sort of career?
I would. I'm totally okay with that. I still want to be humble. And, you know, I don't want to have an ego or, you know, I'm not going to walk around with my chest out. But, you know, I'm okay with being, you know, in the spotlight, and I don't, you know, and I think the trend is to know the chef and see, you know, and see the chef on the floor, which I'm okay with. You know, I've got a clean jacket ready, so I can come out, but I'm also working on the line. I'm not afraid to get my hands dirty and get back there and help the guys clean, even, you know, and I definitely want to be on the line, and part of that is mentoring them and creating a environment that people want to be a part of and want to, you know, if I'm back there myself, they're gonna join me in that and be, you know, they're going to work hard for me if I work hard for them. You know, I try and have a servant attitude with my staff. And I think that is a great way to build a restaurant and to build an atmosphere upon. So
you really are about building right now. So you're in a new restaurant. You're not that 19-year-old kid anymore. And so you're building a staff, you're building a restaurant, you're building your career, you know, here in Zionsville. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, and you know, we've had, you know, there was a little bit short staff when I got here, and now we've beefed up, and I think we're, you know, I wanted to obviously be ready for when we change the menu and you know, moving forward into the holiday season. So we've gotten there, and thankfully I've built relationships with cooks and staff along the way, you know, with CRG and even before, that have now, you know, helped me out, in getting those quality people here, which is somewhat challenging, especially being out in Zionsville and kind of away from Indianapolis. But, you know, I think it leads back to, you know, the way I run a kitchen and more of a servant attitude as opposed to a Gordon Ramsay attitude.
So you're not that kind of a chef in the kitchen yelling and throwing things, right?
Not at all. Now, I mean, you know, every chef has had their moments. I won't, you know, I'm not gonna lie, I've had my moments, but I try and always come back and you know, make it more of a teaching moment, hopefully, and you know, obviously if there's an issue, we'll take care of it, but you know, and I'm trying to, you know, I want to mentor people and grow people, because eventually I want to, you know, I'd love to be that chef that, you know, that mentored so many people, and now they've got their own restaurants and are doing better things than what I was ever capable of doing. You know, I think of like a Tony Hanselitz that has touched so many, you know, lives and food, and has mentored so many people, and now they've gone and done their own restaurants and had great success.
What? Tell me a little bit about what's coming in the future. You mentioned a new menu at Cobblestone. What sorts of things, you know, are just down the road that we can look forward to?
Definitely, you know, we're still going to focus on local, using local farms. You know, Gunthrop Fisher, and focusing on that, and definitely moving. We're gonna move things to be innovative, but still approachable. So, you know, we're not gonna be doing outlandish things that people haven't ever heard of, but we're gonna deliver a product that is, you know, consistent and quality. You know, seasoning and everything that goes with that. And so, you know, we're not drastically changing the concept of the restaurant, but we're going to be providing a product that is seasoned properly and is delicious every single time you come. And it's not going to be, you know, hit and miss. And so I want, you know, like with innovation, we're going to be, you know, doing things possibly just a different aspect, or just look at food a little bit differently. On the menu, you're going to see recognizable ingredients, but then it's going to come to you, and you didn't necessarily think it was going to be that way when you see it. So
there'll still be some surprises along the way.
Definitely some surprises.
So you have a new menu coming out in September?
Yeah, in September 21st, we're planning on changing the menu. We're planning on doing kind of a chef takeover on September 14th. And so that'll be like a reservation only. And, you know, I'll be doing a menu specifically for that evening. So we're really excited about that.
Any things you're looking forward to in particular about being back in Zionsville?
The guests and firsthand meeting the guests and talking with them and just interacting with them and having a great relationship with the guests.
We've been talking with Chef Jeremiah Clark of Cobblestone in Zionsville. For more information on the restaurant, go to cobblestonez.com or look for it on Facebook.
I'm Jolene Ketzenberger, and you've been listening to Eat, Drink, and D-Radio on WFYI HD2 The Point. Thank you so much for tuning into our show today to take a look back and forward at Indy's food scene. And thanks also to our guests, Kathleen Tracy and Peter Courtney of Movable Feast in Indianapolis, and Chef Jeremiah Clark of Cobblestone in Zionsville. And thanks also to producer John Ketzenberger for helping to bring you Eat, Drink, and D-Radio. Eat, Drink, Indie Radio is powered by EatDrinkIndie.com. Eat local, drink local, eat, drink, Indie.